What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula. Berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. And right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
I got this feeling that I've been here before. I got this feeling that I've been here before.
Hello, welcome to We Knows Parenting, the parenting podcast hosted by real-life parents. I'm Beth Newell.
And I'm Peter McNerney.
We are married. We're parents.
We've got kids that are 2 years old and
tomorrow,
almost
4 years old.
Tomorrow, Bryn turns 4.
That's...
And gotta say, I'm pretty excited. We got the cow cake situation sorted out.
Yeah, the cow cake is definitely a brown cow, as you
Woo!
Insisted.
That'll show them. I went in after really vilifying that woman last week. I went in and realized, like, oh, this is a very nice woman. And we patched it up.
Why did you go back in?
To pay for it. Oh. I went in the middle of the week to pay for it.
Okay.
But you picked it up yesterday.
Yeah, I picked it up.
You gave it a peek. It looked okay.
Yeah, I glanced at it. It's, I didn't realize until I got there what a treacherous task it is to try to, like, transport a cake somewhere without ruining it.
Hmm.
And so... they said put it on a flat surface. I put it in the trunk and it was fine. But just walking across the street one way, carefully carrying the cake, by the time I put it down in the car, it was already smushed on one side. Like, I didn't... There's no way to transport a cake that's in, like, a flimsy little white bakery box.
What I was originally planning was to get the cake this morning on the way to school with the kids. And I think that it would not have survived a Bryn and Maven co-traveling situation.
Yeah, no, this was good because I gave it to daycare yesterday as they were leaving. And I was like, get this cake away from me before our kids destroy it. And
so
they took it.
As a result, this morning I just took Bryn and Maven to school. And they're going to celebrate Bryn's birthday at daycare. And... we got there a little bit early, so sometimes we sit out front and wait 5 minutes because I don't want to be obnoxious and go in too early. And so we're sitting there talking. I'm like, Bryn, you know what tomorrow is? Tomorrow you turn 4. And he goes, no, I turned 4 on Thursday. By the way, he doesn't ever say yesterday. He says the day that yesterday was.
Yeah, he's really into the days of the week now. But in his defense, this birthday thing is very confusing because we've been talking about it, and he had got a cake at my family reunion, and he at the family reunion, he turned to my sister when the cake came out, and he goes, Allie, you didn't get me a present for my birthday. So she felt horrible, but she's like, it's not your birthday yet.
But here's a cake. Happy birthday.
Yeah. And then now we're like talking about this cake, and I was trying to explain it to him yesterday. I was like, we have the cake today, but you're going to eat the cake tomorrow at daycare, and then Saturday is your actual birthday.
Yeah, so I tried to explain that.
And I said, Lucas is coming over, and he was like, so we're going to eat the cow cake on Saturday with Lucas? And I was like, well, no, because you'll have already eaten the cow cake at daycare. But I was like, maybe we'll get you something else. And he was like, okay, mommy, okay. And then I guess he thought I didn't hear him, so he goes, mommy, I said okay. He really wanted to make sure I knew he was okay with a second treat.
I just want you to know, I am definitely fine if you want to give me more cake.
I'm down with the compromise.
I'm open to that. Well, what he interpreted from that conversation was that he turned 4 yesterday on Thursday, and his birthday is not tomorrow.
But I think that was just him being disagreeable.
It was him being so disagreeable. And then I was like, okay. And then I just started being silly to distract him because I could see he was about to go to a super stubborn place. And then somebody else arrived at daycare, and they started going in. I go, okay, great. I can be a little early. Somebody else is here. So I pulled them out. And so we're going in at the same time as another family. And Bryn comes in, and the woman who runs daycare goes, Bryn, today's your birthday. And the other woman goes, Bryn, it's your birthday today? And Bryn goes, yes, today is my birthday.
It's funny.
What was that whole conversation about Thursday?
When I handed them the cake yesterday, all the kids were in the front lawn of daycare. And Bryn was like, you're all going to get to have a piece of my cow cake. And he was like so proud. He was like, I am the king and you will get your cake.
I'm just remembering now being young, not that young, but those sort of like 5, 6, 7 probably birthday parties. And I remember preparing. My mom threw some pretty great like lo-fi birthday parties. Like make your own sundaes, homemade games and stuff. And I remember prepping for those birthday parties with my mom and putting out the bowls of the activities and stuff. And then just being like, okay, it's all set. People are arriving. And I have a distinct memory of opening the door for the first friend and being like, welcome to my party. And that exact feeling of like
giving them the grand tour.
Yeah. And it's like, this is my day and I am your humble host. I love my birthday.
The other thing that happened this week is my sister and I took the kids to Playland, which is a very small little amusement park nearby, which was very exciting for Bryn. And it was.
I'm so jealous.
You always do this, though, where if I try to plan something on a weekend or try to motivate you to bring the kids somewhere fun, you're always like, no, let's just lay on the couch. And then when I do these things with my sister, when you're working, you're always act jealous as though you weren't invited along.
Well, I will say it has been a long time since you've been like, hey, let's do a thing. And I say, no, I don't do that anymore. I am real lazy on the weekends. But if you're like, we should go somewhere. It has been a long time since I've said no.
I've asked to go to the beach at least 4 times this summer when you said no.
You know what? You really just got me there. But in those situations, I've suggested something else because I sort of hate the beach.
You haven't suggested something else.
We've gone out. I'll do better. I'm very aware.
Okay. Anyway, we went to Playland. It was amazingly hot.
But he's finally at the age where that I feel like that's prime Playland.
He was
Playland
loving it,
age.
But we made the mistake of getting on this ride at the beginning that's like sort of the equivalent of like a teacups thing, but the seats spin around.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, as the first ride choice, it was really bad because my sister and I were immediately nauseous with the kids. And I was just
a good
like,
way to start.
Oh God, this is going to be a lot. And it's so loud.
Yeah.
And then we found some other rides that are less nausea-inducing, but it's also like a little bit of a weird thing. Maven is like just a little too short and young for things, so you have to go on with her as an adult, which is fine, except that some of the rides don't really have great seating to share with a kid and an adult. So there is one ride where you drive like trucks around. And for Bryn to sit in the cabin of the truck, he had to be alone. So I just decided to skip out on that because Maven seemed tired anyway. She, like, didn't nap mm-hmm. because of the timing of this trip. So I was, like, trying to just, like, shoo her away. So my sister took him on that, and that was very exciting for him.
I saw the video. I've never seen a prouder trucker.
He was so proud.
He's like, I'm driving this, and no one is helping me.
Yeah, he's like, I'm driving a real truck.
He's like, do you see this?
Yeah.
His face, like, I'm driving a truck.
So then, and then there was a live performance by a teenage boy dressed as, like, I guess, like, the Candyman or something. He sang... He sang this song, like, the Candyman Can.
From Willy Wonka.
Willy Wonka. And then he performed, like, a live, like, it was sort of like a morality play where there's two puppets as Hansel and Gretel, and they were annoyed because their supposed millennial parents were always trying to feed them kale and healthy foods. And, like, they literally said, ugh, our millennial parents always want us to eat kale and avocados. And then... And they're like, we just want to eat candy. So then it's like this whole thing where...
Who wrote this?
It's pre-recorded. The teenage boy was the only one singing, doing this live performance very enthusiastically. I have to say he was really committed and really a strong performer. And the puppets are pre-recorded audio to a track. So there's just someone behind there flapping the puppets' mouths open throughout. And the...
I picture that person being the opposite level of enthusiasm as the teen, and he's just an old guy who somehow, with two puppets on his hand, still has a cigarette in his mouth.
Maybe. Yeah, but so there's like a series of songs where these kids go and eat all this candy, and they're loving it, but then they get stomach aches, and then they make jokes that sort of allude to it being like a hangover. And then they go back to their parents, and they're like sort of like, they're like, oh, we never want to eat candy again. And their parents are like, we decided to give you a treat. We're going to make a gluten-free, blah-blah-free cake. And it's just like it's just like such a weird, dumb character. I really do want to know who wrote this.
Sounds like a baby boomer or a Gen Xer.
Yeah, I don't know.
But it's really funny to think of, like, millennial parents in my mind is still like a brand new thing, but we're past that point. Like, there's the, you know what I mean?
I mean, sort of. I don't know. We are on the older end of millennial parents.
Yeah, but
which
we're also,
feels like new to us, but in the rest of the country, people are having kids much younger.
We live in an area where people have babies later.
Yeah. Anyway, it
I
was
still feel like a young parent.
Oh, so here's the craziest part of the story is we're in the park, and Bryn's starting to, like, get into, like, the game areas, and I'm like, we've got to get out of here because I can tell, like, the kids are getting tired. It's overstimulating.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had eyed this log ride, one of those ones where you go inside into, like, dark tunnels.
Yeah.
And I was, like, trying to figure out if the kids were old enough, and I figured out Maven was, like, tall enough or whatever. And I was like, this is definitely going to be probably too scary for them, but it looks so cool and dark in there compared to being hot outside. And also, like, it's on the way out. So I was like, maybe we can just get this done. So we take them in there. There's animatronic trolls. Their kids are, like, immediately pretty scared. And
they were talking about it for a while.
Yeah. And afterwards. They were like, so they were pretty scared, and then it gets to, like, scarier parts. There's, like, a dragon, and it starts with, like, nice dwarves, which is still pretty scary, but then these scary trolls come out, and Bryn and Maven are terrified, and one of the trolls has, like, a water gun that he's shooting at us, which Bryn did not like. And by the end of the ride, Maven was just, like, pressing her head against me, trying to, like, hide in my arms, and Bryn was putting his hands on his ears in terror, and they were so scared. And then we got out, and Maven immediately brightened up. Like, it was sort of like it was like one of those things that was, like, so terrifying to them that I think in her mind she was like, will this ever end? Am I going to die here? So, yeah, she got out, and I think she was like, it's over. She was, like, smiling, and I was like, Maven, are you really happy it's over? And she was like, yeah. And then Bryn was, like, kind of mad at us, and he was like, that was too scary. I didn't like it. So the benefit of this was they were both, lightly traumatized, and I was able to convince them to leave. I was like, you guys want to go home? And they were like, yeah.
So that's a hot tip for all you parents out there.
It really is a good way to scare your kids out of the amusement park when you need to leave.
And traumatize them into leaving.
So then we get in the car, and my sister and I were trying to lighten the mood for Bryn, and we were like, that was so crazy when that troll was spraying at us. We were like, what the heck is going on here? We were trying to make it seem like funny and weird. Yeah. And so Bryn immediately picked up on it and started changing his story and was like, yeah, it was crazy in there. And he was like, I said to that troll, hey, stop that troll. And like, he like changed it where he was like really brave and like annoyed at the troll, which is so funny because he was like cowering in fear when we were in the ride. So
boy, that's my son.
It all worked out.
Well, good job. He's had nightmares ever since.
No, he hasn't. This next segment is called We Don't Knows. It's where we share a perplexing or defeating parenting moment.
All right, I got one. This one's about death. So we are reading a book. We've read this book a bunch. But there was an old woman who swallowed a fly. And we have lots of fun with this book in bed. We do a lot of singing.
Yeah. Should we like sing it?
Maven, each time I turn the page, I do it longer where I go, there was an old lady who swallowed a fly. I don't know why she swallowed the fly. Perhaps she'll die. Okay, so that's where the death comes in. Mm-hmm. And then she swallows the spider to catch the fly, blah, 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 blah. It's a very fun book. By the end, we get Maven and I go, longer and longer each time. There was an old lady who swallowed a fly. It's really fun. And the last one, it goes, was it an old lady who swallowed a horse? And then the page turns and it abruptly goes, she died, of course. And then you flip the page and it says, moral, never eat a horse. And there's a picture of a gravestone because the woman is dead.
Yeah. Maven and Brenna pointed that out to me, and one of them was like, oh, a door.
Yeah, that's what Maven said.
And I
said.
Was like, yeah, I'm not going to correct you on that.
Oh, well, guess what? I did not correct them.
Oh, good.
Well, no, Bryn said, what's that? And I go, and quick calculation in my mind. I'm like, do I want to get into this? I'm like, he asked me. I go, that's a gravestone. And he goes, what's that? I'm like, they buried the old lady because she's dead. And he goes, huh? And then I'm like, I'm just keeping it light and factual. I'm like, yeah, you know how you watch those videos with the skeletons in the graveyard? That's a graveyard.
The Escalitos?
Yeah. And then I said something that they connected with him. I was like, yeah, the old lady, she's buried in the ground. And then you become a skeleton. He goes, huh? And then I was like, all right, I think that's enough. All right, great. And then it took me back. Like, I remember when I was little, I remember my mom talking about death. And in retrospect, I really appreciate the way she handled it, which is very factual and very light. And she would always, we went to church, but my mom never said to me, like, oh, you die and you go to heaven and it's great. There's nothing to worry about. She would literally just go, yeah, well, when you die, like, what happens? She goes, well, we don't know. You know, you die and we don't know. And there's nothing we can do about it, so no big deal.
I don't know. I would have to look into this, but I feel like developmentally, our kids are not at an age to comprehend any of that.
Well, that's why I didn't go that far into it.
Yeah, but I mean, just I'm hesitant to, like, get into any of it right now because I think it's just, like, confusing, like, mm-hmm. they love to say things like you're dead and like play games at daycare where they're like trying to kill each other or whatever. Yeah. And it's like, I just like don't want to get into it because I don't want to give weird weight to those games that they're playing because they have no context for what they're saying.
Yes. And I mean, I remember being very young and like fully grappling with the question of death, and I remember being totally terrified and in bed and unable to stop thinking about it and like rationalizing it.
Wait, this is after you just said you love the way your mom handled it. You're now like,
this is old. This is a little older. Okay. I remember thinking about it, but I don't think there's any way around that. You know, unless you're.
Yeah, I'm just saying, let that happen at an age when they're old enough to like sort of process it and not like.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean,
I don't know.
But it's also, boy, this is going to be the same thing with like sex, which is also something I have found moments where that I'm avoiding.
Well, we had some listener feedback on, we were talking about discussing race with your kids, and I like one of the, I don't remember if we talked about
this. Well, we're going to talk about that later. Okay. Yeah.
But I think I agree those things should be discussed. I just think our son is barely 4 years old and he won't have any idea what we're talking about. And then we just have a little kid who's repeating weird things to other people.
I did think that, though. I'm like, you know what? He's probably going to go to school and be like, you know, we get buried in the ground and become dancing skeletons.
Yeah. I do want to say, I think I'm impressed that our kids have sort of come full circle this year on loving Dia de los Muertos imagery and Escalitos for almost an entire year now, and now we're coming back around to Halloween and it's going to be relevant again, but mm-hmm. they've kept the flame
they've
alive.
They've kept that ball in the air. This Halloween, I think, is going to be the first, like, momentous Halloween for Bryn, where like he knows exactly what he's getting into. He's gonna get his costume, the anticipation, the candy.
Yeah, I think Maven will turn a corner too, because her love of candy is so strong, but her fear of people was also very strong last year.
Yeah, so. Maven Halloween last year, she got the first piece of candy, and she's like, "Well, this is a jackpot. I'm done."
She's like, "Just let me eat this. I don't want to talk to anyone
anymore. Me slowly eat this one piece of chocolate for an hour." And then Bryn realized, I can get more. And he was on a mission.
Yeah. Well, he was also like, "Oh, I get to go talk to people and tell them what I'm wearing? Great."
So anyway, actually, I want to hear from people about your, this is potentially very heavy, but your death conversations with kids. I mean, boy. So, I mean, I don't know if I get into this, but like, you know, when I was, there's people, obviously, there's little kids that have to deal with like actual immediate death in their family. And that's like a huge thing that people, you can't screw it around.
Right.
And to the point of like our conversation about race, a similar thing that like a lot of people have the luxury to not talk about these things. And there's plenty of people that have to like address this with a small child. And I can't even begin to imagine that conversation. But I think overall, this is a bit of a left turn. Kids can handle those conversations a bit more than I think most people, and I know myself personally, give them credit for sometimes. And I feel myself, it's more about me going, "Oh, I'm nervous about this," than it is them not being able to deal with it. That felt true when I said it. I don't know if it is. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think I don't know. Maybe I'm overly concerned with what my kids are going to say at daycare, but like if, for example, one of our kids' grandmothers died, we might say something to daycare and be like, "His grandmother died. He went to a funeral this week." Just like, let you know why he might be saying some things.
Yeah.
So they can be like emotionally aware or whatever. But
and Bryn would be the kid that would explain it to everybody.
Yeah. And I think that's fine. Obviously, you would talk it through. But like, I think you, out of that context, I just worry about like what kind of crazy stuff he's going to start telling other kids, and then their parents have to hear from them their concerns.
Yeah.
I just...
You know what? I'm excited for the challenge.
Okay.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula. Berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. And right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
This next segment is called Did You Knows? This week, Beth has some exciting or interesting parenting facts that she's learned that she's going to share. It's no longer just my segment. I'm no longer mansplaining. Okay. We're getting some womansplaining.
This is a...
That's not a good joke.
You know, this is not so much a fact as a conversation because I'm a woman. And this is an article sent to me called How New Fathers Use Social Media to Make Sense of Their Roles on a website called theconversation.com. But it's sort of just talking about how dads historically don't have as much of a model for being active fathers because they normally worked and the wife would stay at home. And so they'll feel out of place on the playground or in like Facebook parenting groups and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is talking about how dads are sort of figuring it out on the internet and looking for community online. And it was saying how, while moms are more attracted to things like Facebook groups and different things, dads tend to go to places like Reddit where they're anonymous. They can post questions anonymously. And I thought that was really interesting that...
That makes sense to me.
It makes perfect sense and I understand the impulse, but it's also funny to me because it's like a tangible example of this like sort of emotional detachment a lot of men have, like this inability to discuss their feelings and issues and be vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I can see a lot of reasons why you would want to be anonymous online for certain problems. But I also think sometimes in doing so, you're robbing yourself of a certain vulnerability and like a certain type of assistance that you could be getting by connecting with people directly as yourself.
Maybe, but I don't utilize any of that. I'm like, and it probably speaks to the same thing where I'm like, who are you? I don't want you to know about me, and I have a fucking podcast about parenting.
But this is like the male thing of like wanting like a very concrete blanket answer that applies to everyone and going on Reddit and debating like in this abstract way. Like the example they give in this article is like custody stuff. And like, I think, you know, when you do something anonymously online and then you leave out all the context of like who you're divorcing and like, it's so easy to paint this like very biased picture of what's going on and have all these people weigh in and be like, yes, you're correct. This is the correct way to proceed. Whereas in my mom groups, what I like is that people can present a very personal issue they're having with their family or whatever. And then we all know the ongoing context of how this person has been treating them or whatever's going on. And we can be like, hey, I don't like sometimes the answer is not an answer. The person just needs emotional support. And we're like, it's really shitty that you're going through this right now.
Yeah, well, see, but everything you're saying right now, I'm like, that's the last thing that I want to hear from some stranger about. And
right,
I was like,
I'm but not that's why I'm saying get I'm it from share, someone in a Facebook I'm, group that you kind of know.
But I bet dads online, and I'm not a part of this community for probably the same reasons, where I'm just like, that's none of your business. Total hypocrite because I'm doing this podcast. But I bet there's a lot more like, hey, and I think this is in this article that like dads groups, there's a bit more of that sort of like DIY stuff. Like here's some like baby hacks.
But
here's how to do all these things. Opposed to, it's not about... It's not looking for validation. It's looking for tips. You know what I mean?
No, but here's my issue with that is that men pretend that they don't need emotional support, but then they do need emotional support, but they choose to only get it from the woman in their lives. So then they dump all of this onto the like one woman in their life who's supposed to talk them through their emotions and be their therapist and listen to all their problems. Whereas women are, I've said this before, but like women are more likely to go to therapy. They're more willing to talk to their friends. They create a community to deal with these issues that like everyone has. And then they don't burden their partners with like every little emotional problem they have. But then women are burdened with their partner's issues.
Plenty of that is valid. I mean, this is where you get down to, and, like, I know exactly what you're going to say about it. Like, there's a societal and, like, a hardwired difference between men and women in terms of that, like, which bleeds into a ton of these statistics, which is women are far more aware of this social network and, like, people needing each other and are better at reaching out like that, and men stereotypically are more singularly focused.
I mean, some of it is hardwired, but I think also a lot of it is just societal. And
it's on top of that. Because it's that, like, caveman, cavewoman, a woman, if you're going to reproduce, that's a commitment of 18 years. For a man, it's just like sex, that's it. And that puts women's minds have developed way more to think about, what is the effect of this? What is my social network? Who's going to support me? And so that exists.
No, but...
And then on top of that, society has been built from that to exacerbate the difference.
But yes. Here's the thing, is the inability of men to be vulnerable is what leads to a lot of extreme issues in our country, which is like, this is literally where like the MRAs, the domestic violence, the shootings, this is a product of men having nowhere to go to connect and be emotionally vulnerable and admit their pain. There's statistics behind it.
I'm on board with all of that.
But I really like this podcast that's has a kind of dumb name. It's called Dharma Punks NYC, but it's this guy who's a Buddhist and a psychologist, and he is very big in the addict community. And he talks about how, you know, when people, a lot of times their addiction is a product of trying to suppress emotions that they have nowhere to, they have no outlet for. So they are not sharing their emotional issues anywhere. And so they bury them with substance abuse. And I think we can all relate to like stuffing our face with food or some substance or whatever. But what happens is they go to AA meetings or whatever. They're able to share their issues and they have this community of people. And men do this too. They go to AA. Mm-hmm. And they, a lot of times, they're not a lot of times, but sometimes they're able to stop drinking and they'll do this for like 10, 20 years, whatever. And then at some point, they think that they're cured and they are like, I don't have to go to these meetings anymore. I've been doing this for 20 years. And what happens is that they stop going to the meetings and then they like almost immediately will relapse because they're no longer sharing their emotions in a safe space. And they people need that connection. But men are given less opportunity to have it. And they also isolate themselves sometimes based on this internalized idea that they're not supposed to be vulnerable.
I'm, of course, taking this all in and relating it to myself. And I think, compared to a lot of people, I'm very open and not afraid to be vulnerable. But, like, I definitely also... There's something in me. There's something in me that says, like, I don't want to put my shit on anybody else.
But I don't think, like, are you vulnerable in the sense that you have close friends that you could text and be like, wow, I didn't get this audition and I'm feeling really weird about it. Like, I'm taking this too hard on a core emotional level and I just need to say this to someone.
Yeah, I have two friends like that. And I call them more than you. Because I have two friends that also are people that need to work things out loud. And I'm one of those people. And you're somebody that internalizes and listens to everything that people say to you. And you take, so it can be overwhelming when I come in and I'm thinking, I'm processing out loud. And I think it you short circuit because it's like so much. And then you resent me for feeling things because you feel everything I feel. So I have two friends that I go to like vent long term because they do it to me and we both sort of listen to each other lightly.
Overstating that you don't share those things with me.
No, I do. But you also have like you tolerate it for such a short amount of time.
I don't have a low tolerance for emotional confession. I have a low tolerance for meaningless chit chat.
Oh, you just, this is exactly why I don't want to share.
Okay, but like if I meet like a stranger at a party,
yeah.
Like someone was telling me this story, but like they met someone at a party and this woman immediately was like, so I'm going through a divorce, blah, blah, blah. If I meet someone like that, I'm locked in because I'm like, this is interesting. Someone telling me about the downfall of their relationship, I'm fascinated by, like, they're getting into it. This is great. This is someone being real. This is why my best friend, I connect with her so strong, is I met her like twice. I asked to come pick her brain when she was pregnant, and I got to her apartment, and she was like, I feel like crap. My bones hurt. Like, she got into it. And I was like, this is someone I can connect with. What I hate is when people want to list the, like, boring details of their day-to-day, like every little nuance of things that don't get at the truth of who they are and how they're feeling.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. That's really hard not to take incredibly personally. Because all I heard in that is people with horrible shit going on who, like, are open about it. It doesn't have to be horrible shit, though.
I also enjoy if someone is like
people in like big pain who are like very open and have like heavy shit going on.
No, I just gravitate towards emotional honesty. I could meet someone like similarly. I have friends who I've met where the first time I met them, there would be like I love this painter. I'm so in this thing is like, I love what this person is doing. Like they, but
you've also had, some people in your life that like are very like, I was gonna say broken people, but like awkward people that you can tell they're in pain and you feel responsible for them and you feel their pain and you feel guilty for them. And then after a while, you realize, like, oh, this person is a huge burden and they, like, can't take care of themselves. And you have to, like, cut them out of your life.
No, that has happened. I'm not saying it hasn't. Yeah. I just think that that's not always the case with the people I'm attracted to.
True. There's one instance that happened recently. We didn't talk about it. But we met this woman who had a very tragic thing that happened to her. And we sat down, we're like, hi, nice to meet you. You know, we have a podcast. And then she just launched into her like very tragic story. And my immediate reaction is like, I smell crazy because like this, you should not, you don't know me. Why are you sharing all of this right now? But you got into it and you listened and you connected with this person.
She was doing an appearance on a show to specifically talk about that issue. Yeah. Also, here's what drives me crazy is that the tragic occurrence she had is literally exactly something that's happened to me, and you wanted to gloss over it, and you, like, she was saying something, and you pick a detail out of that of, like, I live in California, and you're like, oh, California, I was there recently. And I'm like, this woman just admitted to us this horrible thing that happened.
I was avoiding the topic because I was so uncomfortable.
But that's what I'm talking about, is people connecting over shared vulnerabilities.
But here's the thing.
Literally, what happened to her.
I was like, you're ignoring social boundaries. I was like, this is not an appropriate thing to tell me 2 seconds
into this. She was publicizing a project specifically about that, and I connected with it as something that had happened to me, that people, here's, when something like that has happened to you, people never want to talk about it. They always try to look the other way and change topics. And it's so frustrating because you never feel seen and people always treat you like you're a bummer. And people at their core need to be able to talk about these things.
Sure. But behaviorally, tragedy aside, that was a woman, if you became friends with her, would drive you nuts and you'd have to friend break up with her. Just like
I don't know about
how
that.
She was behaving and like not picking up social cues of the people around her. Tragedy aside.
I don't know that I would have wanted to be friends with that person, but she, what I will say about her handling of it is that I felt like maybe she hadn't fully processed it yet. So yes, it was a little weird the way she was talking about it. But at the same time, my wanting to talk to her was like, to be like, yes, that's happened to me, and yes, that's an issue, and sort of like in that moment, help her process it a little bit. But I have grown enough as a person that I'm not going to like take that on and try to be friends with her and solve it all for her.
Well, to your point, and I think to validate a lot of what you've said, is like my reaction to that, you know, is coming from a place of like a selfish, like, I'm uncomfortable, I don't want to engage in this. And a second part, which is like, I would never do this, to like publicly paint a picture of that, like, I want people to feel sorry for me. I mean, like, that's like, I would never want to project that image. And I'm terrified of projecting that.
I don't like think so, that.
No, I'm not saying that's what she's doing. I'm saying I avoid being vulnerable on day-to-day level because if the second I'm like, oh, if someone's like, how's it going? And I'm like, well, I'm having a rough time with this. I instantly was so selfish of me to do
like,
to you.
Distancing is like why these problems persist. Like, I feel like I just don't
want to do that to people.
But it's okay. It's impossible to discuss this without getting into it. But this woman had someone close to her die from opiate overdose.
Yeah.
And your attitude of being like, hey, can we not talk about this here? Is like, this is why the opiate addiction crisis continues, is that people just want to brush it aside and they don't want to openly talk about it as if it's something that's actually affected them. And they want to, like, addiction in general, we don't deal with well in this country because people don't want to get into the actual details of how it affects people and how much they are a prisoner to it and, like, with the emotional core of what's happening there and the shame and guilt and all of it. And for... it's just incredibly harmful attitude to have of be like, hey, can you not talk about that right now?
No, like, well, see, what you're saying, it's like, that makes me sound terrible, where it's like, oh, I'm not brushing this topic under the rug. I'm reacting to a person that is not, like, respecting the social boundaries of strangers.
No, but that's, she was doing an appearance on a show.
Not with me. I'm just sitting next to her on the couch, and it's...
But it's a natural... But when you're sitting next to someone in a green room couch, and you're like, hey, what are you here for? She can't not say that.
I'm the type of person, for better or maybe worse, where I'm like, I go to auditions and I'm with
but
a bunch of actors.
But you haven't had that kind of problem. You don't understand,
But I'm also reacting to that sort of, like, level of self-promotion, which maybe is a fault of mine, where I'm like, I'm never going to be like, hey, here's who I am. Here's what's up with me.
But I think if you
I see actors like that in auditions all the time. They're like, hey, what are I've
it's
done this.
And I'm like, thing, though. Like, you're...
It's like, just... I hear what you're saying.
I just... If you had to walk through the world, you have a very privileged life. If you had to walk through the world with the secret shame...
This woman has no secret shame. She's a public figure and is like... talking about it, that's great. I'm just saying how awkwardly she put that upon me before I even knew her
name. No one who has experienced this does not have secret shame of trying to over the course of years coach a family member out of an addiction that they can't themselves fix or do anything about, and then feeling like they were supposed to save this person and they can't. That's like, there's no way she's not carrying an extreme amount of guilt and other emotion that you do not comprehend. So the tiny fraction of that you're experiencing in the room that you're like trying to brush off is like she was not putting that much discomfort on you proportionally to what she's experienced.
Oh, of course not. But I was just like, what a fucking weirdo.
Okay. Well, I 100% disagree with you on this.
Okay, if she was talking about any other topic that wasn't heavy, I still would have been like, oh, I don't want to get close to this person.
The whole point is that the topic is heavy. What if she's talking about a race issue? It would be inappropriate to brush that off. If she was talking
about... I'm not brushing off her topic.
Oh, God.
This is heated. This is heated.
I just think it's such a weighty thing that, like, the fact that we... don't want to look at these issues on the news and therefore like refuse to deal with them. Like, that's a problem. The fact that...
But what am I going to do in
that
moment?
But this is what I'm saying about being willing to be emotionally vulnerable is that so many of the women and moms I know are willing to look at things like ICE and share their incredible sadness online and call their representatives and try to do something about it. Whereas the men I know just... don't say a word.
Here's another thing. So this is also speaks the difference between you and me. Because you really, really strongly connect with this Facebook group and this
But it's
group
not
of,
it's, this
of
is
women.
Not a me you thing. This is
hold
this
on.
Is in
let
general
me say
a male female issue.
Let me say what I'm gonna say. But you don't do that in real life. You're
I do.
Far not with me.
Maybe it's because you try to brush it off like you did with this woman.
I mean, you are the most guarded person I know.
No, but if
But there's
I,
something about that oh social community that makes you more comfortable.
I literally bring up things like this to you, and then you do what you did to this woman, which is like you find the one thing about it that's relatable to you, which is kind of a means of brushing off the weight of the original concern. So it's like if someone's trying to open up to you and you're like, yeah, I know, I've had a problem like that. I stubbed my toe the other day. It's like they're not going to feel comfortable continuing to unload.
My brain just short-circuited entirely. I'm getting very – I know that like I can't engage in this conversation anymore. Because I'm at 100% emotional. I just want to acknowledge that. And like, I know you're going to tell me why I am that way, and it's going to make me more emotional.
Okay, but like,
And
but you can't just say that I don't connect emotionally with people because I text friends and communicate all day.
Face to face. That's what you, but that's what I'm saying is that distance of the screen.
No, but I talk to my friends too and say the same things.
Well, I can only do it that way. I have to connect with a face. And like the idea of talking to a faceless group of people, all I'm thinking about is who the hell are these characters? And I create characters that I don't like. And it takes me, and maybe it's because of everything you're talking about, it takes me more time to know that it's a safe space. And I think that there's plenty of like the societal expectations of how a man should behave and how I was raised and that guarded thing that makes me feel like, well, I don't trust that me being vulnerable is going to be received well. It's not going to be read as how obnoxious I am. And so it takes a lot. And there's very few people that I open up for.
But conversely, it's easier for me if I'm feeling very angry or emotional, it's easier for me to text you exactly how I'm feeling than it is for me to try to tell it to you in person, because you will try to dominate the conversation and brush it aside or try to make it right very quickly without actually hearing what I'm trying to say. So that's why I prefer writing it out, because that sometimes feels like the only way to actually communicate.
Well, this is a huge difference between us, because to me, I'm like, your face says more to me than than your words do. I'm not saying you're right or wrong. This is just processing differently.
You're saying that, but then if I was like sitting in front of you, like very angry at you, you would see my face. You would take it incredibly personally. And then on an emotional level, all you would be thinking is Beth is mad at me. I want this to end, and not be thinking about why I was mad.
Well, you know what? You're right. That's true. It's 100% true. And I've learned that. I mean, this has been the hardest thing in the world for me to do, which is to have an emotional reaction and go, you're emotional, which means that you have attention blindness. You can only see the thing that made you upset, and the larger context is currently invisible to you. And you have to shut up, and you have to go away, and you have to be okay with the idea that maybe I'm letting Beth, quote unquote, win, which like is nobody wins, and go away. And let all of this drain from my body so that I can regain my full field of vision to see what's going on and begin to understand. And boy, that's what's happening right now. It's just like I had a second. I was about to fucking flip over this chair and I couldn't I couldn't even think why. I don't remember why. I'm glad we're all witnessing this, because this like that mode of like I'm so angry and I just want to win, and it's as if somebody is handing me binoculars, and now I'm looking at the topic through binoculars just at this one point that's just like, I want to kill this thing, and I just completely forget what's around it.
Right. I mean, but I think, not to probably upset you again, but that goes back to my earlier point, which I think is that men are less likely to feel that processing their emotions is their problem, and they want to put it on someone, usually a woman, to process it for them.
But I don't want anyone to deal with my stuff. I just need to say it out loud and go away.
But the emotions have to get processed somewhere, otherwise we end up with active shooters.
Okay, I'm going to go kill somebody.
Okay, well...
No. I understand that. I understand it.
Okay. Anyway. That was
okay.
Anyway, this was intense. Original article was how new fathers use social media to make sense of their roles.
Don't use it. I don't trust strangers. Boy, this was like 35 minutes of talking. So we're going to have to, whatever you're listening to now is definitely an edited down.
Oh, God. You're going to cut out all my points.
No, I'm not. You want to edit it? Go ahead. But boy, okay, all right. This was a lot to unpack. I want to hear from people. Here's the challenge for our listeners. Okay, if you are If you reacted to this the way I did, you're probably a man, but not necessarily. Or if you're a woman, whatever side of this you gravitated to, if you got emotional about this, I want you to do an exercise. And this is something I have tried.
The idea that there's not a strong gender divide on this is
well, I assume funny. That there is, but I also don't want to assume. If you had a strong emotional reaction to this, I want you to do an exercise with me. This is what I try to do, which is give it some time and come back to this. And I want you to write in or call in and tell me what you learned about the other side of this. Find the lesson on the other side, the thing that you want to reject. What in it is valid? And don't give me why it's wrong. Give me why it's right. And I want to hear
what
people.
What are you asking for, people?
I'm people. This is a debate class exercise where I'm giving you the counter argument that you don't stand by, and I want to hear what you might be able to pull from the side that you don't want to accept. Does that make sense? That's what I'm going to do. I challenge you listeners to do the same and share.
Okay.
Oh, we're getting through it. Beth, I love you with all my heart.
I love you too.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula. Berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. And right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTCAL.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
All right, now it's time for listeners want to knows. Now we've had a lot of listener mail in the past few weeks that we haven't gotten to, so I want to throw out a few and just talk about them. First of all, we got an email from our favorite listener, Barb. We talked about Barb recently. Barb wrote in.
We love Barb.
We love Barb, and she, what I love, has started signing her emails, Barb. with an exclamation point.
She also signs like from Cubicle Land. Is that?
Oh,
is
yeah,
that
yeah. She lives in Cubicle Land. And here's from Barb. She wrote a few things, but this is the one that I gravitated towards. She listened to our episode talking about Brynn on the airplane screaming, "You're hurting me." Mm-hmm. So she says, "We live here in Pennsylvania, but I'm originally from Saskatchewan. We flew home in last year from my sister's wedding, where I was a bridesmaid and my son was a ring bearer. We flew Air Canada, and the only international flight out of Harrisburg is this dinky little Air Canada flight on a 20-seater plane to Toronto. This is fine. The whole plane is terrifying. It sounds like it's going to fall apart. So you kind of sit down, close your eyes, and spend an hour and a half praying to any god that will listen that they don't find your bodies in Lake Michigan. They don't even have a door between the seats of the cabin and the cockpit. Yep, you look right out the front of the plane. The pilots are also the flight attendants. So my son and husband have the front row seats A1 and 2. There's only one seat on each side of the plane. I'm four rows back. My son has his tablet, but he's excited that what the pilots are doing. However, that's only interesting for takeoff, and he loses interest pretty quick and resorts to drawing on his tablet. Every time he draws something, he would hold it up and holler back at me, "Hey, Mommy, do you like my picture?" He had to holler because the plane was loud, but there's 20 people on the plane too, and they all had to see his drawings. And it got to the point where everyone would give him a big thumbs up for every picture he drew, and he thought it was great having 20 people weighing in on his art. I was like, oh man, he's going to think he's Picasso. Cheers, Barb!
I can see Brynn doing that proudly to everyone.
Because
although he's not the artist of the two.
He does okay, but Maven is more advanced than earlier.
Maven really
age.
Impressed me a couple weeks ago when she started drawing faces with circle eyes and a mouth, and I was like blown away.
Yeah.
It's really impressive for her age.
She's also very good with scissors, apparently, they say at daycare. Brynn, when we applied to pre-K and we asked daycare to fill out a thing about him, they, like, grade him on certain skills, and he had perfect scores on everything except, like, hand-eye coordination.
It was, like, fine motor skills or something like that.
Yeah, it was, like, one below.
It's like, once again, he's exactly you, and Maven is exactly me, because she's,
I am great at scissors! But you're better. You know, we have a lot of proof around, including paint lines around this apartment that prove that you're better at that than I am.
If there's one thing I'm good at, it's scissors.
Yeah, if there's anything you're good at, it's drawing, painting in a straight line. If Brynn did that on an airplane, that would be my worst nightmare. When I was little, and we go to the store, and if my mom ever yelled across the store for me, "Hey, Peter!" I remember being at Blockbuster, and she's like, "Peter, where are you?"
And you would, like, duck and cover.
And I ducked down below the shelves and, like, quietly, like a ninja, rushed to her so that she would stop. But it wasn't until I got to her I was like, yeah, I'm here. What? But I'm still that way. Less so, because I'm a man and I can't be vulnerable in front of people. Come on! Anyway, here's another email. Are you ready? We had a couple of really interesting emails from our conversation about race, where we talked about when is an appropriate time to talk about race and all the societal implications attached to that with your child. And we left that conversation going like, we don't know. We'll sort of hit it when we think he understands. This one woman, Rachel, wrote in and said she has a son who's 3.5 years old, and he's definitely aware that people are different colors. My husband is from India, and so he knows that mommy is white and that papa is brown. He calls himself both, depending on when you ask him. And I just leave it there. It seems to me the best course of action is to say, yes, people are different colors. I have a tattoo, so I told him that you can add color to your body as well, which he finds really cool. I normalized the idea that it is a way to identify people, but it isn't adding that political bias that people seem to want to avoid talking about. Little kids like to use simple categories to help order their world, and color is a great way to do that. I'm taking the approach that if he asks me more questions about the differences between people, that is when I will explain it, because he is showing an interest and wanting to understand. Hopefully that helps. I don't know. Ha ha! Rachel.
Yeah, I think we had another listener that said something similar that was sort of like a way you could talk about it with young kids is like if they ask you, just be like, yeah, some people are this color, some people are that color. I think that makes sense. I, at the risk of sounding like I'm trying to like skirt the conversation, I think if a kid brings it up like that and says something about your skin color, I think it makes perfect sense to respond. I just think if you're like taking a very small child like we have and sitting them down to have this conversation out of the blue, it's going to result in some sort of weird thing on the playground where they're trying to like label other kids. You know what I mean? Like, it's like...
Yeah, it's like I talked about death because Brynn goes, what is this? Where's the old lady? Yeah, for sure. And this is very much talking about sort of the factual component of race, that you look... People look differently, and it being okay to acknowledge that, obviously, is great.
I'm sure there's got to be some sort of book out there or resource that, says exactly what developmentally is appropriate for different ages.
Actually, it's reminded me, we got some emails about that, some stuff I still need to dig into. But here's this is another email that was great. This is from Chloe. I really like that you guys even touched on the topic of talking about race with your kids. I just wanted to make a point that it is a privilege to decide that you don't have to talk to your kid about race, even though they are so young. For children and parents of color, not addressing race is a luxury that they do not have, for safety reasons particularly, which seems... while it seems like a scary topic to touch on, I don't believe it's something to be left until the last minute and hope they turn out okay. This is an excellent point.
No, it's a great point. I still just have to keep saying our son is just barely turned four, though, and it's like...
Yeah.
I don't want to leave this conversation the last minute, but I also don't think it would make sense to have with him right now out of the blue.
Yeah, but the big thing is recognizing, you know, that particularly, like, if you are black parents in this country... Not exclusively, but like that is a conversation that's probably that needs to happen in certain circumstances for safety reasons. And I know I've talked to parents, people of color who, you know, relationship with the police, they have to talk to their kids differently about, and we have the great luxury of not worrying about that.
Yeah, for sure.
And that is like, we don't have to explain it to him right now because I don't think he'll understand. But there's no danger in that for us. And that is a privilege and something I did not consider at all until I got this email. So thank you, Chloe. That was great.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much for listening. This has been another episode of We Knows Parenting. If you'd like to submit a question or share a story, give some advice or suggestion on possible parenting hypothetical for our Would You Knows segment, you're welcome to email us at weknowspod@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 347-384-7396.
You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at weknowspod. Our website, weknowsparenting.com, also has all of this information along with some t-shirts.
Merch.
Take a look at that.
Buy some funny shirts. Also, maybe this is the week you give us a good review and you write something about it.
Rate, review, subscribe.
Yeah, especially this, our most contentious and emotional episode. tell us that you love us. Thank you guys so much. We love you. Have a wonderful day. Goodbye.
Bye.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of 2 clinically studied ingredients in 1 revolutionary formula: berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. Right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.